Right, we're gonna we'll just quickly review over the Mishnah and the bottom of Kaf Zayin Amud Bet, and then we'll get into the Gemara today. First thing, so no dream the Aragim of Karmim and the Malchusim. So we said yesterday in that Mishnah that you can take a neder to these people who are coming to rob you. And again, we talked about the different these are different types of robbers. Aragim are people who are marauders, almost, who will kill you if you do not give you your money, and the Rambam even points out they're Jewish. The Haramim are people who are just thieves that come and steal, and the Mochsim are tax collectors, which the Gemara will discuss today. She Truma, you can take a neder that this object is Truma. Apopi, she ain't no Truma, even though it's not Truma, meaning that by establishing that it's Truma, they will not steal it. So you're about to take a neder that it's Truma, even though that is not true, or she'll bait them out. This stuff belongs to the king, even though it does not belong to the king. So these are nedarim that you're taking to protect your possessions, and you're allowed to take them. That you can use a neder, but you cannot use a shvua. I mean, that if you want to protect your stuff, you can use a neder, but not a shvua. Shvua because it's too chomor. It says lo yinakeh by a shvua, and therefore we don't want you to use a shvua. Based on me, mach b'shvua makes no difference. You can use a neder or a shvua to protect your possessions. Bechami omrim lo yiftach lo b'neder. That Bechami says that you cannot open with a neder. With him, meaning that if he doesn't ask for the neder, you can't volunteer to make a neder or to can't make a neder to protect your possessions. But you even can open with a neder. I mean, if you want to protect your possessions, you can say, you know, this is truma and don't take it. Bishami says that your neder should be limited to that which he asks you for, meaning the possessions that he's asking about, or the people that he's asking about. Even about it, items or people that he's not madiro. Kate said, what's a case like that? That my wife, you say that your wife is restricted from getting out, not from you, if this is not truma. He says, my wife and my children. He adds in his children to be restricted in a noah if this is not truma. Again, this is the tam that neder shehutar mitzah, so is not hutar mechlo'o. And therefore, if his wife is mutar, because that's what he asked for, and his children remain asur, and Bezalel says, no, elu beelu mutarim. This is still part of this form of neder, and they are both mutar. So the first question is about the tax collector. Why is one allowed to take a neder to protect their possessions from the tax collector? So why can you evade taxes? Right, that we have Shmuel's statement that the Malchus, the din of the Malchus, right, is din. And therefore, why can you then try to escape or avoid paying taxes? And why do you have a right to do that? I mean, that you have to live by the law of the land. If you have to live by the law of the land, what gives you the right to cheat or to try to escape taxes? So Amar Rav Chinah, Amar Rav Kana, Amar Shmuel, but Melchis Shein Lo Kitzvah. Talking about a tax collector that has no limit. Rabbi Yane Amar Melchis Omer Meilav. Right, that a tax collector that stands up for himself, meaning that he's not really a part of the government, meaning that he's a thief of sorts, meaning that he's collecting taxes, but not by the approval or the assumption of the government. So now the question is, how does this solve the problem? With a tax collector that has no limit, why does that solve the problem of Dina de Malchus Dina? I mean, if the Dina de Malchus is that he can collect taxes, why does that solve your problem?
I've seen in the Israeli system that sounds pretty much correct.
Yeah, well,
that there's no limit to the tax.
So that's the question. Is that sufficient? That no limit. What does no limit mean? Why is no limit automatically an obvious need for to listen to Dina Machus Dina? And number two is, does it apply in Israel? I mean, are we talking only about non-Jewish kings, or are we talking about Jewish kings as well, or in the land of Israel?
Yep.
So then, Tosus says about why does Mokesh and Lokitzah work? Tosus says because this is not the normal way to appoint tax collectors, therefore it's considered gzela. Right? And then, That's why it's considered tzedakah here, meaning that that's not the normal way to collect taxes, but meaning that that's a possibility in Tosfos' explanation. If that is the normal way to collect taxes, that that would be, maybe that would be okay. The Rosh brings two other possible explanations. Is if you look down in the Rosh, it's in the wide lines in the Rosh. If you look, we'll just start from, you see where it says Gemara in the Rosh, we'll just start there, make it easy. It says Gemara in the Rosh, right after the mission of Gemara. It says, Amar Shmuel Dina D'Machus Adina. After Chikona Mechas Meita Melech, someone who buys the right, this is what they used to do in their time, it wasn't like today where it was a centralized collection system. The people would buy the rights from the king to collect the taxes. Also the Gazlo Menu, you can't steal from him. How could the Chum say it's mutar to take a nether that will steal from him? That's Dina Machus Dina. So he says, Moche Shein Lo Kitzvah, I love Dinahu. It's no longer a din. It's only worth works when it's equal, when everybody's treated equally. Then the buyer can do what he wants. Right, when they have an unequal tax system, then it's not true. What does that mean? So the Rosh says that you have to have equality in the tax system. If you don't have equality in the tax system, that obviously needs to pay taxes. That's not the Machus Dina.
I'm news for you. Even in America, I'm a CPA and I do a lot of tax work. if you're wealthier, you can negotiate with the IRS. Not off the board, but if you have a case with them, everything becomes negotiable.
Right.
It becomes a bizarre. So I've learned that over my years.
Right. So even before you start to get to the negotiations, the tax rates are not the same.
No, they are the same. But once you get to a situation where there are questions.
I'm saying it's graduated. I mean, the more income you have, the higher the tax rate. So that's the Ma'it Lazel, the Rabot Lazet. Now, maybe that's only what the Rosh is suggesting, which I think would be pshat here, is that only where it's arbitrary. If it's arbitrary, who pays more and who pays less? Then you would say that it's not Dina de Machus Dina. But if everybody who had that income would pay that a higher sum or higher number, maybe that is not considered Ma'it Lazel Rabot Lazet because it's a standard by which everybody is held.
That's what you call income, though. That's the question.
Right. All right. So those are. But anyway, if there's a quote unquote system to the madness, right, then maybe that's included under Dina de Machus Dina versus here, which I think the Rosh is suggesting is that it's random. Now you suggest the other one, Inami. So that's the other one, is that he's taking more than the, what does it mean that he's in lo kitzvah? It means that the king only assigns or allows to collect a certain amount, and he goes way beyond that. Therefore, everything he takes becomes gezel, because he's really not acting within the wishes of the king. He's acting on his own, not within the wishes of the king.
The king doesn't care.
Right. He doesn't, it's not what he wants. He doesn't want this. Now, in the Ran, I just point out an interesting note here. In the Ran, which also has implications today, especially in Israel, and whether democracy in Israel has this issue. But if you look in the Ran, where it says, Amokhis Omen Me'alav, it's about six lines down in the narrow lines in the Ran. Six lines down in the narrow lines in the Ran, it says, Amokhis Omen Me'alav. Right, only with non-Jewish kings do we say Dina de Machus Dina. Why? Because he owns all the land. If you don't do what I say, you're out of here. And then he can expel people, which was happened to the Jews numerous times. But since the king controls the land, can expel people. Therefore, he has a right to say, listen to me, otherwise I'll expel you. Aval b'malchei Yisrael lo. Jewish kings, that is not true. The fish Eretz Yisrael, kol Yisrael shutafim ba. Eretz Yisrael, all Jews are joint owners in it. And therefore the king has no right to expel anybody from the country. If he doesn't have the right to expel people from the country, he does not then for have the Dina de Machus Dina, because he can't say, if you don't listen to me, you must leave. Therefore he doesn't have the impact of saying, Dina de Machus Dina. Now obviously there are Rishonim who argue on the Tosafot, but just an amazing Tosafot that there is no such thing as Dina de Machus Dina for Jewish kings in Israel. That's one. So that's one important distinction. Tosfos raised, obviously, Rishonim argue on that. The second question would obviously come today. In a democracy in Israel, what's the status of a democracy in Israel? Does that have status like Mapa Israel? And Tosfos says there's no such thing as Dina Mapus Dina here in Israel? Or no, that democracy will be more similar to the the Ovdei Kochavim, and therefore Dina Machus Dina will apply today in Israeli society. Again, obviously it'll have to do also how you define Dina Machus Dina. Tosfos gives a very narrow explanation about the ability to kick someone out of the land. Right? So maybe the right to imprison people, maybe that gives the government enough right to establish that there's Dina Machus Dina, even in a democracy or even in Israel. It's just important. And then the Gemara is about whether one can avoid taxes. This is one of the important Gemaras about people not, quote-unquote, cheating on their taxes, which is an important factor. And the most compelling reason that people should not be cheating on their taxes is because of the Chilul Hashem aspect of it. It's when people get caught, nobody thinks they're going to get caught, but when people do get caught, Chilul Hashem is tremendous. And then the Avera is Gadol Min So, because it's not even stealing anymore, it's got to do with Chilul Hashem. And I don't know in other countries, but I know in America, it's very, very sad situation, because it comes on the front pages of the newspapers, and it's very, 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 very bad for the Jews in general, and just a big Chilul Hashem that people do steal from the government. All right, the other Gemara is in Baba Kama about whether one's about to steal from a non-Jew. What can one, if that's whatever that Gemara deals with? So we're not getting into that part of the sugya. But again, I think the most compelling issue is the Chilul Hashem issue. All right, next line of the Gemara: Shein Shel Beit Melech. He considered that it belongs to him. Keiki Nodar. What's the neder that he took over here? Amrav Amar Amar Rav, Omer Yasru Perut Olam Alai, Im Einam Shel Beit HaMelech. Says that the Perut Olam will be restricted to me if they don't belong to the king. So Gemara says, Kevin Damar Yasru, it Asru Alai. He said they should be Asru. Why shouldn't they be Asru Alai? That all the fruits of the world should be usher to him. He took a neder that this is belongs to the base of Melech. If it's not, then I am usher in payroll. He didn't tell the truth. So the tonight triggers, and he's usher in all the payrolls. Why should this not work? Now, there is a difference. I see some of the Rishonim have a difference in their gear cell. That the first taking neder was Amar Yisproz Olam Alai Li Olam. They had in the word Le Olam forever. Because then you'll see in the next line of the Gemara tries to solve it a different way. So either the problem here is because he just took a regular net there, and there's no way to know, that we say Dvarim Shabalei Venim Dvarim, what you're thinking, it doesn't matter. And here you said something, and you triggered a net there. Why should, no, it's not, there's no way to know that this is not a real net there. Or because you said the Olam forever, right? So that was what caused the problem. Because that was either an unnecessary addition, or because, why did you say the Olam? So the Gemara suggests, oh, maybe why don't you say this? Bomer Hayom, that I will be restricted in all fruits today, right? And then, I'll be restricted in all fruits today if this does not belong to the base of Melech. So the Gemara says, E Damar Hayom, Mobo Kamo Mene Mokes. They'll know that he's playing games. I won't eat any fruits today if this is not the base of Melech. They'll go, hand over the stuff, right? Because they're not going to believe him that this belongs to the base of Melech. That they're aware of the Harama. So when it says no, but Omer Belibo Hayom Omotzi Bisuatav Stam. That he knows in his heart, he says that it only applies till today. And in his mouth, he says just a Stam Neder. So that, again, this will go, the Rishonim will go, or go raise the Olam above. That was the problem, because he specifically said the Olam. If he says Stam, then we can interpret his Neder. And but the fact that in his heart, he's saying Hayom, we're going to say that impacts on the saying of the nether without modification. So again, generally, if you just said the nether without modification, we'd assume it meant the olam. Because here, because of the circumstances, and because you had in your heart that hayom, Chum said that that would be enough to interpret the nether to mean hayom. So I've got this real on dvarim shalevinim dvarim, that generally to hold that what you think doesn't matter. The gabion seems shiny. Over here, where you're pressured, right, you're being pressured or you're under duress, we're going to say that they have impact. And so that's the finish of the Mishnah here. The finish of the Mishnah here is that even though generally, if you were to say a nondescript restriction, meaning that Yesra Eli Kriyot Olam, I don't give a time limit, then we would assume it's forever. But here, because of these circumstances, we allow you in your heart to say Hayom, and therefore that will modify the netted to be only for today, and that's how the Ontzim gets you out of this netted. But if you explicitly stated that it's Leolam, it's forever, then it wouldn't work, meaning that you'd be stuck in the nether because you basically cause yourself your own problem. You didn't need to say Le'olam. By saying Le'olam, you don't leave yourself this opening where it's a undefined term and you can define it in your heart because you've defined the term to mean Le'olam. Okay.
So I thought the Gemara was going to say that he said like something like, this day I declare, and then said the vow, and then it could be interpreted two ways.
Sorry, I think that might work also. The point is here is to make something that is a nether that is unmodified, right? Or somehow
it's completely unmodified.
Right, there's an unmodified term, and then you can modify the term in your heart. So in your situation, you could have something like that.
Much bigger chiddush.
Right. So, I mean, it's a bigger chiddush than what you're saying, but even what you're saying might work also, which is that if he can, it sounds like if the interpretation can be played with, he can do that. I mean, that's the point here. Alright. Which is a quote from our Mishnah. Then Amar Avuna Tana, we have a Braisa that says, our Mishnah says Lo Yiftach Lo B'Neder, right? Alright, he has a Braisa that says Mishami Amin Lo Yiftach Lo B'Shavua, Betel Amim Af Yiftach Lo B'Shavua. So he has a price. So instead of reading Lo Yiftach Lo B'Neder, like in our Mishnah, it says Lo Yiftach Lo B'Shavua. So what does it sound like? Based on that price, so what does it sound like? The Beit Shammai B'Shavuah Hu Lo Yiftach Lo HaB'Neder Yiftach Lo. Sounds like from that price, that what? The Beit Shammai only restricts you from starting with the Shavua. But if you start with the Neder, that would be okay according to Beit Shammai. B'Hatnan, doesn't our Mishnah explicitly state, Beit Shammai Omrim Lo Yiftach Lo B'Neder. Right, that you shouldn't start with it. But two, miftach with lo yiftach lo b'shavua. Ha, midor nadar b'shavua. The second problem with the brisa is that he can't initiate a shavua, right? That's the language of the brisa, is don't initiate a shavua. But it sounds like if the guy asks you to make a shavua, you could make a shavua. And what does our Mishnah say? But it's not. Beit omrim b'chol nodrim chutz mishavua. Our Mishnah says that you can't take a shavua at all according to Beit Shammai. So you have two problems here. This brisa opens up two issues. One is that from Beit Shammai and the Braisa, it sounds like number one, you could start with a neder, and number two is if you don't start with a shvua, but if he asks you for a shvua, you could make it. Both of which Beit Shammai and our Mishnah explicitly disagrees with, which is one, that you're not allowed to start with a neder, and number two is you're not allowed to take a shvua even if he asks you for it. So how are you going to reconcile between this Braisa and the Mishnah? So Gemara says one possibility. The Mishnah spoke about a neder, to teach you the strength of Beit Shammai. So that's the first answer. Gemara says, you're right. You know what? Don't make any inferences from the language of the Braisa about Shavuah, because each the Braisa and the Mishnah are really relying on each other. I mean, they were both aware of the other one, meaning that the Braisa didn't come to say exclude what the Mishnah said, and the Mishnah doesn't come to exclude what the Braisa said. But rather, they come to teach you how far each opinion goes. The Braisa is coming to teach you, even by Shavuah, the Beit Hillel says you can start with the Shavuah. That's the how far does Beit Hillel's head there go, even to open with the Shavuah by yourself. Do you take the initiative and take a Shavuah? That's okay. That's what the Braisa came to teach you. And our Mishnah comes to teach you that even with a neder, right, Beit Shammai says that you cannot start with a neder. You cannot initiate with a neder. Even though it's not a Shavuah, you can't even initiate with a neder. And therefore, the Mishnah mentioned neder and the Braisa mentioned Shavuah. Each wants to show how far each opinion goes. So then, Rav Ashi Amar Hakiktani. Rav Ashi meant it to read this way. Beit Shammai Omrim Ein She'ela B'Shavua. Beit Hillel Omrim Yesh She'ela B'Shavua. So Yiftach, when we read the Braisa, we read Tana Yiftach, Beit Shammai B'Shavua, it says, Lo Yiftach Lo B'Shavua. Right, so we read it like the interpretation in our Mishnah. Yiftach means to initiate. But we know the word Petach is also used in our Masechta to mean Petach L'Neder, Petach L'Shavua means to get Hataras Nedarim, Hataras Shavua. So that's what Rav Ashi says, read the Braisa, not this not an issue or machlokas about initiation or about neder. I would say this is a totally different subject. The subject that we discussed earlier, which is what? Whether you can have a taras nedarim by... taras shvuos, right, you know.
It makes the mission much more extreme in the machlokas, no? Because one is saying now, you know, you won't be released from your nether. And the other one's saying that you can go ahead and do it. You can even do it.
Oh, so no, they might be independent. In the case in the Braisa, the Mishnah is, what we read, is pretty straightforward. The Braisa is not talking about a case in Nidre Onsen. It's talking about Stam Shavua, any Shavua that you take. Not related to this case at all. Can you go and get a Petah with Shavua? Can you have a Taras Shavua in any case? Bishavim says there's no such thing as a Taras Shavua. Shavua is too chamur, it's too stringent, and therefore we're not going to let you undo a Shavua at all. Bishavim says no, just like there's a Taras Nedarim, there is a Taras Shavua. So it's not extreme, like you were suggesting in our mission, that in Nidre Onsen there's going to be no way out. So the principle of Bishavim and Shavua in general, which is, would be extreme in Shavua, but that is, and we saw about earlier that maybe that was a Machlokas Tanayim. The Ran suggests that this Machlokas Beisham Beisela might affect, earlier on we discussed about whether there's a Petah L'Sheila, whether there's such thing as a Hatara L'Sheila. Alright, next Mishnah. Hari Netiota Elu, these saplings or these plantings, Korban. They are karban. Here, karban not meaning neder, but karban literally, hekdesh. Right? Einam nikatzot, if they are not cut. Okay, if they're not cut down, they are kodesh. Talit zu karban im ena nisrefet. This talit will be kodesh if it is not burnt up. So now the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, yesh lem pijom, you can redeem them. That's the first mission, part of the Mishnah, the second part of the Mishnah. Hari nitiyot eilu karban, these nitiyot are karban, ad sheikatzitzu, until they are cut down. Talit zu karban, ad shetisareif. This talit will be a kodesh until it is burnt. Ein lahem pijon. There is no redemption. You cannot redeem such an item. All right, so now, to say the least, the mission is a little cryptic. All right, so we have to discuss what does this mean. So, sounds like from the Mishnah that in the first case, what happens? A person says they take an edda that this is kodesh. As long as they are not cut down. That means once they are cut down, the Kodesh would go away. As long as they're Kodesh, you can redeem them. That's what the first part says. The second part says that these are Kodesh until they're cut. And they're, or this is a talus until it's burnt, you know, cut down. And then it says inland pidgeon. So we're going to have a machlokas amaroyim, how to explain this Mishnah, but just laying out the two pieces there. Velitnei kedushot ve'einan kedushot. I mean that, why does the Mishnah go after the lashon of pidgeon, shalahem pidgeon, inland pidgeon? That they are redeemable and they're not redeemable. Meaning, it skipped a step. The Mishnah skipped a step. It should have told you, is this a valid form of Kedusha? Can you make something Kodesh like this? All right, if they're Kodesh, then we can discuss whether there's Pidgin or not. But the Mishnah skipped a step and automatically went to, are they redeemable? Are they not redeemable without addressing the basic issue of Kedusha? What make Kedushas being Kedushas? Somebody says, I did by the Mitnah Seifa in Lehem Pidgin. This question of the Gemara is really on the Reisha. The Reisha says that Yeshlan Pidyon, it should have said Yeshlan Kedushot. Now the Ran and some others don't have a gears of simply Litnei Kedushot. They don't have the second half, the Ein Kedushot. I mean, the question is not on the entire Mishnah. The question is only on the first half of the Mishnah. First half of the Mishnah says that there is Pidyon, which suggests that they are Kodesh. So if they are Kodesh, it would be enough of a Kodesh to tell us that they are Kedushot. Why did the Mishnah skip to say Yeshlan Pidyon? So that's Gemara's question. Litnei Kedushot. I did the Bible in the Seifa. The Seifa says, in the Pidyon. In the Seifa, you have to say that they have no redemption. So therefore, Tani Nami Reisha, Yeshlan Pidyon. So again, to parallel structure the Mishnah, they use Yeshlan Pidyon in the first half, even though, truthfully, Kedushot would have been a better term to use there. So now the Gemara says, Heikhi Nada. What happened in this case? So why? Amar Meibar. Im Amar, Beomer, Im Einan Niksatzotayom. If they're not cut down today, Bavarayom, below Niksatzu. And they didn't go, the day goes by and they're not cut. Right? Then, Gemara says, Im Kain Lamalitha Meimar. What's the Chiddush here? Pshita. Right? So that's a simple case. If you say if they're not cut down today, they are Kodesh, then of course if they're not cut today, they are Kodesh. I mean, you have a Tanai, it's a simple Tanai, and then you get rid of it. So what's the case here? No. This is the case, well, Tzricha Kigon De'ika Zika Nefisha. There was a hurricane. There were strong winds coming. And in all likelihood, what's your assumption? That the trees are going to get ripped out of the ground. So he says, what? Im inik tatot, if they don't get blown away today, then they are Kodesh. So what is he saying? His assumption in the nether is that they are going to get knocked over. So what are we going to say? Maybe this is Nidresh Bagos. Because his underlying belief when he takes the nether is that they're going to get blown away. He doesn't really intend for them to be Kodesh. But then what happens? They survive the hurricane. So now are they Kodesh or not? So that's the Kiddush, the Mishnah. Then they are Kodesh. The fact that he took such a neder and says, Mina Niktatot, that is considered a good neder.
It's nice sorrow.
What?
It's nice sorrow, isn't it, if you're in this kind of situation?
Right, well, that's the Gemara's Havamina, that it's a Nidresh Gogo that he's taking. But the truth is, what's the Tzara? He's not compelled to take this netter here, right?
No, he's so
worried.
Yeah, right.
He's so worried about his... that still doesn't... In the other cases of Nidresh Gogos, we say that there was some factor that, he was... That outside factor that caused the problem in the Shkogos. This was never the intent of his netter. And there was some outside factor that caused it to... Either he forgot it when it was Michal, or some sort of onis took place. And over here, neither of those is true. When he took the nether was chal, and there was nothing to talk about. It was chal then. And number two is, when the tree doesn't get blown out of the ground, right, that didn't happen because of an ones. Right? That happened because the storm didn't take it away. So this doesn't, the worst Kiddush is that this does not qualify as a normal Nidresh Gogos. Right. Alright, so now, the Gemara says, and I'll prove that to you. Why? Because, Vaktani La Gabi Talis. Right, so the Gemara says, because the second half of the mission talks about Talis. The Talis is straight for climbing? Why would anybody say, take a ned there, that if this Talis is not burnt, right, then it's Kodesh? I mean, what possesses a person to say such a thing? If you buy a tree, all trees in the end are gonna die or fall over or get blown over, right? So you can say, if it's not cut down, it's Kodesh. Because the end result of a tree is usually that it is Niksax. But the end result of a talus is not that it's usually burnt. So it must be, what's the case? In Kagom to Ikadzaleka, there's a fire. Right? So therefore, since there's a fire, the fire is approaching. He says, if this talus is saved, then it is Kodesh. He thinks they're not going to be saved. The reason he's taking this nether is because he doesn't think them safe. That we don't consider that. I mean, that basically he thinks they're gone, and therefore he makes them Kodesh. So what are you going to say? Because he really thought they were gone, he made them Kodesh. He really didn't intend to make them Kodesh. He thought they were going to be zero. And he was in a sense, he was a false giver. Meaning that he's giving to Kodesh because he thought they would never exist, because they were going to get burnt down or blown away. And therefore he said it. And when the nether comes true, meaning that they aren't burnt or it's not cut down, maybe he shouldn't be Kodesh because that was never his intent. Where it says, Mashmallah, no, this is a good nether. I mean, once he gives up, when he's miyayish on these items and he makes them Kodesh, that means that he's, I would even phrase it, maybe he even means that I'm making them into Kodesh to you, Hashem, so that they do get saved. I mean, that's his intent. He's saying, listen, they're not mine anymore, Hashem, they're yours, you save them. And therefore, the Kedusha is Tofes. Right now, next one, there's two lines in the Gemara. We'll read these two lines in the Gemara, and then I'll just point out to you that the Ran, starting from the wide lines on our daf in the Ran, into the wide lines on the next Talmud, that Ran discusses these two lines in the Gemara. Right, it's a massive Ran, and it discusses just these two lines in the Gemara. We'll read them, and then I'll explain to you there are two ways to interpret these two lines in the Gemara, and we'll speak it outside. All right, Molam. So the Gemara says, "Hari nitzit to elu karma." What's going on over here? So Uli Olam, Amar Rav Pada, what happens if they become Kodesh? Meaning that if he says that these Netios are a Karban until they're cut down, until they're cut down, what happens if he redeemed them? Amar Rav Pada, Tadaan, If he redeems them, chozrot v'kodshot. After you redeem them, they'll become kodesh again. Why? Because your neder is kal. What does your neder say? Your neder says they are kodesh until they're cut down. Therefore, if you redeem them before they're cut down, what's going to happen? The kedusha is going to come back again because your neder is still in effect. Padan, right? Chozrot v'kodshot. If you redeem these, yes. Right, say that they're kodesh now because you said they are kodesh until it's cut. So now you go ahead and redeem it, and you take the kedusha off. Yeah. Now the tree is available again, and you're saying it's that neder that you originally took says hari lo kodesh achinik tatot. So the neder is still in effect, and they become kodesh again.
Okay, I thought you were saying that when it's cut down, it becomes kodesh. But no, you mean
as long as they're still not cut. So if you redeem them, they keep getting their kedusha back. Right. This is what Bar Pada says. The vow is still in effect. Right. Achi katsu until they're cut. Once they're cut, niksatsu, they still are kodesh because they were kodesh before they were cut. When you cut them down, the kedusha doesn't go away by itself. Then podan pamachat. Once you redeem them, once they're cut, then the kedusha stops coming back because now your neder is not in effect.
But if you didn't redeem them the first time,
right,
and then they were cut down.
According to Bar Pada, they're kodesh. They're kodesh. It says, "Hari elu karban." They are kodesh. Ad she ketsu too, until they are cut. That means that the way Bar Pada is reading the neder is that your neder says this is kodesh, but that, and it's in effect. My neder will go onto this tree as long as it's still not cut. Once it's cut, my neder will never take effect anymore.
You can redeem it, and it won't be kodesh anymore
afterwards. That's what Bar Pada is saying.
As opposed to the cutting being like a redemption.
Right, I mean the cutting would end, the other possibility, which is the next Gemara, is that the cutting itself takes away the Kedusha.
Yeah.
Alright, so that's part about his explanation. Once they're cut down, like you were suggesting, shuv ain't podim. There's no reason to be podim them. Your nether said, these are kodesh, until they're cut. Once they're cut, they're not kodesh anymore.
So how would he hold they were redeemed before?
Okay, excellent. That's my focus. Exactly my focus. So the first way to interpret it is simply to say that even Ula would agree through Bar Pada that while they're still alive, before they're cut, right? The simple way to interpret it is before they're cut, they are kodesh, even according to Ula. Because Ula agrees that it's only after they're cut does the kedusha go away. But as long as they're still not cut, they're still alive and they're still growing, right? Your nether said, Hari Elum Kedusha. And the kedusha will come back. So Ula would agree to Bar Pada's first statement. If you redeem them, the kedusha keeps coming back. Their machlokas is simply about once it's cut, what's the status of the tree? According to Bar Pada, when it's cut, the kedusha is still there. And because the kedusha is still there, you have to redeem it one more time. Because all you said was that kedusha will not come back again once it's cut, but not that it goes away by itself. And Ula says, no, your nether said it's kadosh until it's cut. Now that it's cut, the kedusha goes away, and therefore there's no need to redeem it. That's one way to learn the machlokas. The other way to learn the machlokas is, no, they argue on both points. They argue on both issues. That Ula even argues on the point of Bar Pada, that if you redeem them while they're still alive, that the kedusha will not come back. And why would he argue on that point? And that's because we have to do something with his statement. All right, so this is the issue. When you say Hare Elu Karban, Achnik Tatzot, right, these are a karban until they're cut down. Achnik Tatzot, what impact does that statement have? Right? According to Bar Pada, right, that statement, Achnik Tatzot, has no impact. Because even after you cut them, they are still kodesh.
Yeah.
So Achnik Tatzot, what does the word Achnik Tatzot do, according to Bar Pada? It causes it that even after you redeem it while it's still alive, the kedusha comes back again. That's the word Achnik Tatzot has to have impact. And where does it have impact, according to Bar Pada?
Yeah.
It has impact in the fact that if you redeem it, it'll keep becoming kodesh. Because your term Achnik Tatzot means it's kodesh, and every time it's not kodesh, it will become kodesh again until it's cut. So that's the meaning. But according to Ula, Achnik Tatzot has impact. What's the impact? That when you cut it, the kedusha goes away.
And therefore, if you argue that also, if it was redeemed, the kedusha would come back, then that statement would be giving like a double chiddush.
Right, or the fact that he's already used the statement, we've defined what that statement means, that no longer has impact while it's still alive.
Yeah.
Right, so that's the machlokas that we've shown him here. I don't understand whether Ula argues Tarsus and Varpado on both issues.
Yeah.
And the reason I say they argue on both issues is because we're trying to define the term Achnik Tetzot. According to Varpado, the term Achnik Tetzot has no meaning in the sense that when you cut it down, the Kedusha does not go away, and therefore he has to give it meaning while the tree is still alive, and that means that every time you redeem it, it becomes Kodesh again. Whereas Ullah says, no, Achnik Tetzot means it's Kodesh, you cut it, it's not Kodesh anymore. If that's the case, then I don't have to give meaning to that word while it's still alive, and if you redeem it while it's alive, there is no longer any Kedusha. The other way to say it is no. Ullah agrees to Barpado that what that if, as long as it's alive and you redeem it, it always will become Kodesh again. But their argument simply is about at the point of cutting, what does cutting do? According to Ullah, cutting removes the Kedusha. Spite of least, cutting says this is the last time you need to redeem it. As the Machlokes Rishonim about how to deal or how to understand these Machlokes Amoraim, I will point out one important halacha that comes out of this is here we're talking about karbanos, we're talking about Kedusha. Does this have application in other areas? For instance, gifting. What happens, this is the Rashba's question, what happens if you gift somebody a field? Or you gift them an item, right? When you gift them the item, then you go ahead and you buy it back from them. You say, for instance, this field is a gift to you until I go up to Yerushalayim. Right? Then you go ahead and you give it to him, and then you buy it back from him, and you still haven't gone up to Yerushalayim. So would that mean that he can go ahead and take it as a gift again? Because you said, it's a gift until I go up to Yerushalayim. So that would be dependent on this Machlokas Barpado or Ullah. Is that true? I mean, does this have application outside of Kedusha, or is this something unique to Kedusha? Because, so that's, if you look here in the rhyme. Right. So if you look in the Rashba, look here, we're showing the Ron, the Rashba, just show you it because it's very, very interesting. It has major implications, obviously. But here, because of our Rashba Zal, it's in the middle, it's about dead center in the widest lines in the Ron. It's about the center. It says, because of our Rashba Zal. It's about the halfway, up halfway.
It's a headline, yeah.
Yeah, you see it?
Sorry, the white lines.
Yeah, the widest lines of the Ran.
Yeah,
okay. Kadar Rashba Zal, the Ulo. Alright. Kadar Rashba Zal, the Ulo, the Pollock at the Barpada. Now, the Akashi cuts it too. So, first of all, to answer your question, that you said the Ramah passes like Ulo, depends what you think Ulo thinks. Ulo might agree to Barpada's first statement, which is that when you redeem it, it's still Kodesh again. Right? So just because you pass it like Ullah doesn't take away this question. So the Rashba holds that Ullah agrees to Barpada in that first case. The Barpada lo paki kedusha bichti, or the Ola paka, avalad she cut it to until they're cut, kliyama pada and chosro the kedusha. So that was one of the opinions we said in the Rishon, this is the Rashba. That what? That Barpada and Ullah only argue about after it's cut, but once, when it's not cut, everybody agrees that if you redeem it, it's Kodesh again. Right? Now I am inland pigeon. The cave and she cut the cut, you can learn from here to Dine Mimonos. What? So Omer Lechaberu, Leich Chazek Ukne, I go ahead and be Maxik in my property, Ukne Sadeh. Oh, Shaytanur Alach Meyakshav, Achei Lech Yerushalayim. This property is given to you from now until you go up to Yerushalayim. The Chazer Mekonom Imenu. And then the gifter goes back and buys it back from him. The giftee, the receiver of the gift, can go back and take it back again. He says, you know what? You made a statement that this is a gift to me until you go up to Yerushalayim. You still haven't got to Yerushalayim, so it's my gift again. I'll take it back again. It'll always be yours. So that any time that he buys it from him, he'll have to give it back to him. So the Rashi qualifies this chiddush, and he says only when he says mi'achshav. Why? Because you need a kinyan, right? By matana and a gift, you need a kinyan. So mi'achshav, you need mi'achshav because otherwise, what happens later on? If after he buys it back from you, the gifter buys it back from the giftee, right now you want to go take it again. Where's your kinyan? Right, where's the gift? Where's the gift has to have a kinyan? Where's that kinyan? So if you say mi'akshav, that goes back on the original kinyan, it means from now it's gifted to you. Right, as long as I don't go up to Yerushalayim. That means that every time he comes and takes it, he's relying on the original kinyan. But if he didn't say mi'akshav, he needs a new kinyan. And now there's no kinyan in existence.
But if it's from mi'akshav, how does the actual purchase by the original owner work? Because There's no change of ownership because it's Ma'achshav. The gift is Ma'achshav.
Now, I give my gift. This gift is from Ma'achshav until I go up to Yerushalayim.
Yeah, so in between those two times, how can the original owner purchase it back? Because it's never coming back into his Rashut.
It will. I mean, he'll buy it, and then it'll go back and be a gift again. I mean, that it'll be there for a second. I mean, that the giftee owns it now. And he can do whatever he wants with it. He can sell it back to the owner. He can sell it to a third party. Now, truthfully, if he sells it to a third party, and then that third party sells it to the original owner, he can't come and get it again because it's gone through a third party in between. Once he sold it to a third party, it leaves the whole realm of the net. It only works if he sells it right back to the gifter, then he can come back and take it again. About lo amar lo me'achshav lo kani, the cave in the kaniyu b'chazaka hu, chazaka zu shemachshik hashav karkalta, it's gone, lacha shekana mimenu. Right? So that's a discussion about whether he needs me'achshav or not, but it's an amazing chiddush of the Rashba. The Rashba says that this doesn't have only application by, number one, doesn't have only application by kedusha, but has application even by dinei b'malonos, one. Number two is the Rashba says that Ula agrees to bar pada in the first case. So you can argue on the Rashba in two ways. One way, which is the Ram brings down b'shem hachacham agodo of Moshe Kartavi, who argues and says that bar pada and Ula even disagree in the first place. So you can argue on the Rashba's position from one of two, but one is that Ula and bar pada argue even when the thing is not cut, when the tree's not cut yet. They argue in that instance and say, even there, Ula says there's no Kedusha. That if you redeem it, it's done, and there's no more Kedusha. So that would undermine the Rashba's Kiddush, because he's relying on the fact that Ula agrees to Bar Pada, if we're going to pass him like Ula. That's one way to undermine the Rashba. The other way is to say that even if you hold like the Rashba, that Bar Pada and Ula agree, that once you've redeemed it, it becomes Kodesh again, you're going to say that this is unique to Kodesh, and it doesn't have application to Mimonos. Because, and that's what the Ran comes back way, way later here on this next Talmud, and starts to think about whether there's the ability to have this Kenyan, and it's somewhat suspect, because even if you say Me'achshav, right, even if you use the term Me'achshav, why is it that the Kenyan, there was only one Kenyan? Right, when he says Me'achshav, he didn't really intend it to be a multiple Kenyan Me'achshav. Me'achshav says, here is a Kenyan, and the Kenyan is effective now. But that doesn't mean that this Kenyan is effective now for every time you want to come and take it back later. Right, so that, you can, it's suspicious, it's questionable whether you can apply this to Mimonos, by Kedusha, makes sense, because something becomes Kodesh over and over again, and by Kodesh, Amira, you're speaking, makes it Kodesh, and you need no form of Kenyan. So your nether, the fact that its existence, you can make something Kodesh over and over again without any need for Kenyan. But in Monos, where you need a physical Kenyan, you need some form of Kenyan, that even if you say Me'achshav, that only allows for one Kenyan. And therefore, later on, when you come and try to buy it again, that may not help you at all. And so the last thing, if you look in the Ran, on Chofter Amar Aleph, and Chofter Amar four lines down in the widest lines in the Ran, on Chofter Amar Aleph, four lines down, it says here, Va'afa Rashba, in the middle of that line, it says, Va'afa Rashba Zal. See that? Va'afa Rashba Zal. Hayachochek Bedino. He used to laugh about his din, meaning that Lomar, Dain Dinze, Ela B'Makdish Bilvad. And that even though I created this, the Rashba said this great Kiddush that applies even by Dinei Mimonos, he says that by Kodesh, maybe it's only his application by Kodesh. Hashem, the Hekdesh Chal, Kedusha Shepev, Amir Balochu, what I just explained, right? Kedusha can have impact when you make a statement. I mean, simply making a statement by Kodesh is enough. And therefore, when you make the nether can be recurring without any form of Kenyan. The same thing, if you gifted it, you may give it to Tzaka. Make a nether, this is what we give to Tzaka. Actually, Yerushalayim, Amira Kedusira. That type of speaking is like, you don't need a physical Kenyan. A vow, but if you use a Kenyan, no. Demai de Koni, right? Because what's he going to have a Kenyan for? Afilo ha afilo marle me'achshav. If he uses the term achshav, achshav will denote ela b'kesef star b'chazaka. You don't use, even if you say achshav, you still need a form of Kenyan. What's the Kenyan? Kesef star b'chazaka. Kesef o star b'chazaka shenase al mechazeh o matana zu rishona. That when they were done originally, because shechazeh zevekana kvar kalta kenyatam. The Kenyan's done. It was done, and now it's over. Shall Elo v'sof ma'ikne? And what type of Kenyan are you forming now? Who says you can have a single Kenyan be used over and over again? That's not necessarily true. All right, so this is I think it's a very interesting case. First of all, we have a Machlokas Amoraim. There is a Machlokas Rishonim. How to explain the Machlokas Amoraim, whether Udo and Parpad are arguing totally, right, in both cases that they mention, and therefore, not only after you cut it down is there argument, even before you cut it down, whether you have to redeem it once or multiple times. Right, that's one Machlokas. Or the other Rishonim say, no, that Udo and Parpad, before it's cut down, agree. That's one machlokas. And now about the impact of Kedusha, but the biggest impact it will have is in Dinei Mamonos. Dinei Mamonos, if you believe that Ulam Parpad agree before it's cut down, and we pass them like Ula, then what? Even in Dinei Mamonos, possibly in Dinei Mamonos, like the Rashba says, you'll have the same thing. If you gift something, and then it's bought back, it'll be gifted over and over again. And that's a big fiddish, and the Rashba himself says that since it's such a big fiddish, he's not sure that it really works. Again, because maybe Kodesh is different, and the fact that Kodesh is able to be given over through a Dibor, and that can happen repetitive times. Okay, a single Dibor can create multiple Chiyuvim. But when you have a Dinei Mamonos, you require a Kinyan. And even if you say Me'akshav, that doesn't mean that the Kinyan will have application multiple times. It just means that from now, the Kinyan is Chal. Doesn't mean that this Chalos Kinyan can happen again and again and again, Me'akshav. And therefore, maybe even if you hold that Ula agrees to Parpada, it won't have application by Dinei Mamonos.